This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And happy Earth Day, everybody. Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to the wake-up call on WNRN. Our guest today is Josh Wheeler. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
So much closer to that microphone.
All right. How about this?
Yes. Sounds much better. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's greatly appreciated for both of us. We're both on air. Not everybody gets to do that. We will be talking about the Muzzle Awards. What we're going to be talking about is free expression, First Amendment. Josh is the director of the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. And the Muzzle Awards are given out annually to folks who are, I guess, doing things to smack down free expression.
Right. This is an award you don't want to get. The Muzzles are awarded every year on or near Thomas Jefferson's birthday to bring to light some of the more egregious or ridiculous affronts to free speech that have occurred in the past year.
It sounds Sean McCord is here today, and he's a big movie fan. This sounds like the Raspberries. Is that what that's called?
We've been compared to the Raspberries. Remember the William Proxmire, the Golden Fleece Awards. Yeah, that sort of dubious honor. It's exactly what we had in mind.
But we are talking about a topic that is very important when you talk about the First Amendment rights to free expression.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the purposes of the Muzzle Awards is, in a humorous way, but to call attention to a very important issue, and that is that threats to free speech occur every day in this country. And I think too many of us often think because we have a First Amendment, oh, our First Amendment rights are safe. The right of free speech is safe. And in fact, the greatest threat to free speech occurs when too many of us take the right for granted. We have to be vigilant. And the Muzzle Awards are a way of reminding people, are illustrating to them that, in fact, threats to free speech are happening all the time.
Well, I definitely want to cover exactly how the center came about, but let's jump into and give people an example of the Muzzle Awards. I think there's a fair number of people who may be familiar with it. There are others who have heard the name because the center is based in the Charlottesville area. But the first one on my list was given to the Florida legislature and Florida Governor Rick Scott. And I think it's called the Ocala incident. Is that correct?
The Ocala incident is what started the ball rolling in this one.
For
2012. That's right. We give out the muzzles, like the Academy Awards, we give out the muzzles in the year after the year that the incident took place. But the Florida legislature and Governor Rick Scott earned a muzzle for passing a law which severely restricts what doctors, physicians, can say to their patients about guns and gun safety, or in fact it limits their ability to inquire about gun safety and what steps their patients are taking to maintain a safe household that has guns in them. Now, doctors do this kind of thing all the time on all sorts of issues. You know, if you have a pool, they inquire about the kids driving with and listening to music or distracting and texting at the same time, about riding bikes without a helmet. But what happened in Florida was a doctor inquired of a patient if she had a gun in the house. She did not think that that was any of his business, which, of course, is her right to do, and she refused to answer. The doctor then felt that if she didn't feel comfortable enough sharing that kind of information with her, that perhaps she ought to find another doctor in order to have the kind of, you know, doctor-patient discussion that she would feel comfortable with. Well, that was what was known as the Ocala incident, and that's what started this whole ball rolling about getting this law passed, which restricts, makes it a crime, actually, for doctors to inquire without any kind of justification to inquire of their patients whether they have a gun in the home or not.
Well, I understand the importance of asking about texting while driving and sort of alerting your patients to issues that they may have, maybe overlooking because of their own busy lifestyle. But why would a doctor care, or why would a doctor be allowed the right to ask about guns? Because that's the Second Amendment, isn't it? Why should you be asking and caring about whether or not I have a gun?
Well, let's remember, this isn't about gun ownership. This is about speech about gun ownership and gun rights. And guns can be very dangerous things if not handled properly. In fact, the NRA, to its great credit, probably does more in terms of training people about how to properly handle guns, in terms of organizing gun safety kinds of programs. So the idea, in fact, I'd turn the question around, which is, I wouldn't say why should they be able to ask. My question is, what business of the government is it to interfere with what a doctor talks to a patient about? This is speech. You know, the government should not be sticking its nose into speech, particularly speech between confidential speech between a doctor and a patient, whatever the topic.
11:06 on the wake up call. We are talking about free expression, First Amendment, the Muzzle Awards of 2012 with Josh Wheeler, who's the director of our local Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. And that is the first of Muzzle Awards for 2012. I think I have 8 on here. Is that right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then the Lifetime Achievement Award.
It depends how you count, because like this one is sort of to the legislature and Governor Scott. We like to call this one "What's Up, Glock." we try to have some fun with the muzzles too. Or another way of saying it is, a patient says, "Okay, I'll turn my head and cough, but don't you dare ask me about my .357 Magnum."
That's right down there. I see the phone ringing. Sean McCord is here today. You're welcome to call in with a question or a comment about the Muzzle Awards, free expression, the Thomas Jefferson Center, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Even though the center is here in Charlottesville, this is national. In fact, one of them sort of takes it international set of awards to that are given out every year. So, Josh, what sort of topic comes up most frequently in the Muzzle Awards? Are we talking about, now this had to do with guns, a little bit with politics, but is it politics? Is it religion, we'll find a little later on, guns?
That's a very good question, Rick. It sort of evolves over the years in terms of what subjects happen to be the ones that tend to be most censored. Religion, absolutely, is one that comes up quite a lot. And that's because you find this tension between the Free Exercise Clause and the Free Speech Clause and the Establishment Clause. And the Establishment Clause, of course, is the clause from which the Supreme Court has interpreted that there's supposed to be a separation of church and state. But the problem is that very oftentimes government, in being so sensitive to not trying to appear as if they are promoting one religion or another, often discriminate against in any kind of situation, might discriminate against speech on the basis of the fact that it is religious in nature. And it's a very, very hard line to draw. The center does not get involved in Establishment Clause issues, so this doesn't come up as much for us, except when it's a free speech issue. A number of years ago, we gave a muzzle to a town in Florida because during their annual Christmas parade, it used to be advertised as, or somebody wanted to have a float in the parade that said, "Jesus is the reason for the season." And they would not allow them to participate in the parade with that for fear that that would violate the Establishment Clause. Well, the problem with that is, in terms of Christmas, Jesus is the reason for the season. I mean, whether you're Christian or not, you know, it is. And that seemed to us to be a clear case of where they were discriminating against the speech because it was Christian speech. There was no real danger of anyone believing that this was government endorsement of speech. So that is one issue that comes up. But a more timely issue, one that I see a lot today, is speech about gay rights. Now, the center, let me just stress this, the center is a nonpartisan institution. We don't take a political stand on these issues. We may personally have our own politics and our own feelings about these things, but we don't take a stand on these political issues. We do take a stand on speech about political issues. And what we're finding very often, are seeing a lot of today, is a lot of discrimination against gay and lesbian, transgender speech, particularly at the high school level and lower school level, of not allowing students access through websites. In fact, that's one of the muscles we have this year. So that's a topic that's getting a lot of censors going these days.
11:10 on the wake-up call, we are talking with Josh Wheeler. He's the director of Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. We are talking about the 2012 Muzzle Awards about free expression and having it slapped down in some areas. This is WNRN, and the folks in Lynchburg's 89.9 are listening today. Support also coming from L. Oppelman's Center, Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department now featuring acoustic guitars and banjos, mandolins, as well as electric guitar packages, violins, and complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. Online, it's loppelman.com. Josh, you're talking about gay rights sort of being something that comes up frequently. Let's jump to that one. Are we talking about the Lake of the Ozarks?
We are.
Explain that.
Well, as we say about this muzzle, it took place in Missouri, and it involved a school district which has filters on the school computers, limiting what the students can access.
Not unusual.
That's not unusual, and in fact, it's mandated by the government that if they're going to receive federal funds, that they have to edit out or filter out certain material. That's fine. Sexually explicit material, that's fine. I think we can all agree that, well, maybe we all can't agree on that. But that's something that the idea of keeping offensive material out of the hands of kids, particularly on publicly owned computers, is fairly uncontroversial. The problem is when they start filtering on the basis of particular viewpoint. And this website, this web filter that the school district in Camden Town, Missouri was using, was prohibiting access to websites that didn't contain sexually explicit materials or photos or anything like that, but they might be websites that were promoting equality for gay and lesbian, transgender, the LGBT community. At the same time, however, the filters did not block access to websites that were highly critical of this lifestyle of lesbian, gay, of homosexuality. Now, that's the difference. The government is engaging in viewpoint discrimination. They are promoting one side of the argument and not allowing the other side to be heard. And so the Camden Town School District had the opportunity to adjust their web filter to change this, but they refused to do so in the face of criticism. It was taken to court, and they were determined to be engaged in viewpoint discrimination, and they were told, you've got to come up with a better web filter service.
And so they got a muzzle award.
They got a muzzle. As we say on this one, putting the M.O. in homophobia.
I'd like to know whose sense of humor is being used to label these.
That one I have to give credit to somebody on our staff, Susan Kruth, who is very, very, very witty and good at coming up with these.
How does the center approach sexually explicit dialogue or computer, maybe not videos, but certainly print material. How is that not slapping down free expression in terms of that the federal government can say, here's our money if you don't allow this?
Well, you know, that's a good question. We in fact, challenged, we're part of the many groups that challenged that law when it came out, but the Supreme Court ultimately upheld it to be constitutional. The idea was, I guess, is because these schools aren't required to take this kind of funding, it's their choice, and that there can be certain restrictions placed on the acceptance of this money if they want. I think that's the thinking of it. On the other hand, there's also, we have to remember that there are established exceptions to First Amendment protection. There are categories of speech that if your speech happens to fall into that category, the protections might be less or non-existent. One of them is pornography. I mean, not pornography, but obscenity, which has a very specific legal definition that has to be met. But it is geared towards sexually explicit material. So under the Supreme Court, and this is established precedent for nearly half a century, if material is obscene, it's not deemed protected under the First Amendment. Now, of course, the real battle, the devil is in the details, what is obscene, what isn't. And we have all sorts of fights about that all the time. People who feel that Michelangelo's statue of David is obscene because it shows male frontal nudity, whereas other people think that this is one of the great works of art of all time. So that's the constant battle in that area.
All right, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you need the toll-free number to participate in today's discussion with Josh Wheeler and myself about the Muzzle Awards given out by the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Josh, let's go back to sort of the beginning now that we've jumped in and described a few of the awards. How did the center come about? And well, let's just start there. How did the center come about?
Well, the center pre-exists my coming to it. So I'll just have to tell you, this is all hearsay based on what I've learned since I've been here. I've been with the center 17 years. The center's actually been around 21 years. Founded in 1990. The original director and director for the first 20 years of the center was Bob O'Neill, the former president of the University of Virginia, and also an expert, one of the nation's foremost authorities on the First Amendment. But even before Bob, even actually before Bob came to the University of Virginia, the university was considering and exploring the possibility of some sort of organization dedicated to the protection of free speech rights. And these sorts of things take years. It was, I think it took a variety. The idea evolved over the years as to what the purpose of the center would be, exactly what mission it would serve. And when Bob left the presidency of UVA, it was just sort of a perfect storm, a time that he could take over as director of the center. And at that point, the center came into being. And I guess, sorry, that's not really getting at your question. I think what they were looking to establish was a dynamic organization that not only protected free speech and press rights, but that exclusively protected free speech and press rights. There are a lot of organizations out there that are involved in many civil liberties, or if they're involved in the First Amendment, they're involved in, you know, there are five freedoms in the First Amendment, you know, as we discussed earlier, establishment clause, religious clauses of the First Amendment. Our mission is exclusively to the protection of free speech, well, free expression, free press, right to petition the government. But essentially all of those things we think fall under the heading of free expression. And our mission is exclusively that. And we pursue that mission through litigation, appellate litigation. We just won a big victory this last week in court, which I'd love to talk about if we have the time. But we also pursue the mission through a variety of other ways. As I said earlier, the greatest threat to free expression is when too many people take it for granted. So the center undertakes a lot of programs designed to foster greater appreciation or greater awareness of the role that free speech plays in democratic society.
All right, 11:19 on the wake-up call with Josh Wheeler from the Center for the Protection of Free Expression. We're talking about the 2012 Muzzle Awards. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy with wind and rain today. Highs in the lower 50s. A little cooler over in the valley. Rain and wind. Possible snow after midnight in the valley tonight. Lows 40 to 45 elsewhere. Cloudy with wind and rain tomorrow. Highs 45 to 50. Right now, it's overcast, light rain out there in some places, 48 in the valley, 51 in Lynchburg, 53 in Richmond, 53 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support for WNRN and the Wake Up Call coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, presenting the Blue Ridge Mountain Sports Experience, their 40th anniversary celebration at the Intellos Wireless Pavilion on Saturday, May 12th. They'll have Infamous String Dusters and Sons of Bill. Proceeds benefit Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have two locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. Josh, let's jump into another one of the awards. One of my favorites, at Sam Houston State University. Now let's remember that despite free expression that the FCC has given us certain words that we cannot say, during certain times of day. So we will refer to this as the F word.
Okay.
And jump into it from there.
All right. By the way, I'll just note that we gave the FCC a lifetime muzzle award a few years ago. Moving on to Sam Houston State University. In response to a policy, administration policy being adopted, not important which, but that a number of student groups objected to at Sam Houston State University, they asked if they could establish a temporary free speech wall on which students and faculty could write anything they would like. And this was a pretty massive thing. It was, if you go to our website, you can see some photographs of it. Our website, is it all right if I promote that?
It's, oh, yes.
TJCenter.org, and then just click on Jefferson Muzzles for the 2012 Muzzles. But a big wall. It was a temporary installation. It was only supposed to be there, I think, for a day or two, over which they put parchment paper. And people were invited to come and write whatever they wanted to write.
So well, for those of us in the local area, it's a temporary piece of similar to what we have on the downtown wall. It's not slate, it's paper.
Exactly. It was something people come up and can write whatever they wanted to write. Well, somebody wrote using the F word in conjunction with criticism of President Obama. Well, a faculty member saw this and did not appreciate it. He thought that was disrespectful, of course it was, of the president, and he went to the students who were had organized this project and demanded that they take it down. They refused, saying that this was all part of free speech and that it would be contrary to the purpose of the wall if they went and took down speech just because he objected to it. Well, at that point, this faculty member took it into his own hands, and he went and got a box cutter, and he went and he literally cut the offensive word off of the wall.
Now, let me interrupt for just a second. One of the things that I found most interesting in reading about this on the webpage is that F word was elsewhere on this wall.
Right.
It wasn't like this was the only place where you could read the F word.
Exactly.
This was the only one that he wanted to cut down.
Right. So his objection, I guess, was not so much about the use of the F word. It was the use of the F word in conjunction with President Obama. And that gets into political speech, which is deemed to be the sort of speech that gets the most protection under the First Amendment. Well, by the way, I need to go back and say that the students had gone and received went through the entirely appropriate process for getting this wall approved and with the administration and even with all the potential of people writing offensive speech. It was approved, and they were allowed to do this. So when this wall was physically damaged, they called the administration, and the administration themselves said, well, you need to call campus security about this. So they called campus security, and campus security came. They saw what was on the wall. They went and talked to the professor, and then they came back, and they told the students that they had to remove all the profanity off of the wall. Instead of reprimanding the professor for destroying their wall, they had to remove all of the profanity. When the students said, excuse us, and just generally inquired, when did profanity become illegal? Because I forgot to add that the police said that if anybody put any more profanity up there, they would be arrested. When the students inquired genuinely about when profanity became illegal, the officer responded to say that it's okay to use it until somebody gets offended. Now, if that's the protection that the First Amendment provides, we're in a lot of trouble. If speech stops being protected when people are offended by it, you might as well get rid of the First Amendment. I mean, you don't need a First Amendment if we all agree on everything, if we all agree what's offensive, what's not. And so this particular muzzle goes to the professor who literally carved out the speech on the First Amendment wall, and to the Sam Houston University security force who have a gross misunderstanding of how the First Amendment operates.
Let me follow up with that, because when I was reading this, it made me flash back to something that happened here in Charlottesville. We have our own First Amendment wall downtown, right across from City Hall, correct?
Right.
And I believe that was commissioned and funded by City Hall.
No.
As well as your organization, correct?
No, that's not correct. No private money went into the building of the First Amendment Monument. That was raised completely from private funds. No tax dollars went into the building of the First Amendment Monument.
Okay. But there was a drawing, so free expression, right, that was put up there.
Yes.
That City Hall went out and erased.
Right.
Why didn't they receive a Muzzle Award for seems to be the same thing?
Well, because the circumstances were very different. I'll get into the circumstances really quick, but what we give the muzzles for, what we consider the more egregious affronts to free speech, people who are unrelenting in their action, and they don't deny what they did, but they and in fact they still argue that they were in their rights to do so. In this particular case, I first learned about it when I got a call from Maurice Jones, the newly appointed city manager, to apologize to me for what had happened. Maurice was new on the job. He had a whole bunch of things going on. Someone came in and complained, and he just didn't know. This was one of the things he'd yet to be briefed on, which was the policy about the First Amendment wall. All he knew about it at this point was that, as it is, that people can write on the wall, people can come up and erase the wall if they see something they don't like.
Other people.
Other individuals.
Not government.
But not as a matter of government policy.
Right.
And he just hadn't been briefed on that. And the second he learned and got that wasn't what was supposed to happen, he called me to apologize, said it wasn't going to happen again. And in fact, I have to admit, I think Charlottesville city government has been remarkably tolerant of some of the things that have been up on the monument.
Right.
So that we felt, rightly or wrongly, it was our opinion that just did not.
It got cut out early.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have done it, but it didn't match up with some of these other ones.
Right. And it was a mistake. It was a mistake of thought, not a mistake of heart.
All right, 11:29. We've only been through three of these awards, so the second half of the hour, I'll try and pick up the pace with Josh Wheeler, the director of the Thomas Jefferson Center for Protection of Free Expression, as we talk about the 2012 Muzzle Awards. Let me thank The Backyard for their support today. UVA Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a seasonal menu. They're open for lunch and dinner, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. Backyard is now open on Sundays, serving brunch and then a pub food menu until close. You can call ahead for takeout if you'd like, 202-8215. You can find the Backyard on Facebook. You can probably find the Facebook on the Backyard's favorite page. All right, so let's get back. We had a caller in with a question. We were talking about Camdenton's school district. We were talking about filtering software for and here's the question. Todd from Charlottesville asks, recognizing that what they did was wrong, how should schools handle sensitive and possibly offensive discussions in school when students can be subject to peer bullying based on lifestyle choices, clothing, etc.?
That's a very good question, and that's one that schools are struggling with. And of all the people who get muzzles, to tell you the truth, the one that I feel most uneasy about are school officials. They really do have just a terrible burden on them because they have so many constituencies to answer to. They've got the constituency of the parents who are so concerned about their children, both in health, safety, and also their education, what lessons they're being taught, both academically and morally, what values they're being taught. Then they've got people like us that if ever they go too far in trying to keep their kids safe and educated and teaching positive values, we come in and we slap a muzzle with them or we're yelling at them about this kind of thing. So it's a constant struggle. What happened in the Missouri case, and part of the reason we gave the muzzle, was that they were informed beforehand that this policy, that their filters had this problem of engaging in viewpoint discrimination. And they were given the opportunity to change that. And in fact, the ACLU had gone around and notified a number of schools that had the same filtering system. And they made the adjustments. Camden Town refused to. And it was only until a court came in and said, you've got to change this. You can't engage in one side of the conversation or the other. But the caller's right. It's a very, very tough issue. But in regards to this particular and bullying of kids, this is one of the reasons we thought this muzzle was appropriate, because these websites that were being filtered didn't have sexual content in the sense of photographs, things like that, sexual material. These were largely websites that promoted a positive viewpoint of gay and lesbian, transgender websites, promoted equality for them. There are a lot of young kids who are looking for that, who are going through, they're questioning this kind of their selves, their own sexuality. They're looking for answers. And this kind of censoring denied them access to one side of the argument in this.
All right. Let's take a couple of these almost together. So let's speed up these couple.
All right.
I want to talk about, Catawba Valley Community College.
Okay, this is an interesting one because you're asking about contemporary issues. Posting on Facebook seems to be the source of a lot of censoring activity right now, or the justification. In this case, the school adopted a new student ID, which could also act as a MasterCard of sorts, a debit card. A student at the school strongly objected for a couple of reasons. One is that this often resulted in some unseen fees, charge fees when students use these cards. And secondly, it subjected them to a lot of undesirable emails.
Right. It wasn't that you could get a student ID otherwise. It wasn't this one or that one.
Right, right.
This was the student ID.
And it subjected students to get, you know, the financial service company that they had that the college had the agreement with, had now access to their email and this kind of thing, and suddenly started flooding them with credit card offers and other financial services thing. So this one student who led this movement against this posted on the college's Facebook page something to the effect, well, Why don't we all submit the information of the addresses of the administration to some pornography sites, things like that, and let them start getting this kind of unwanted material, see how they like it. And then he wrote, well, okay, that's an over-exaggeration. And he wasn't serious or anything. Well, 3 days later, he's called out of class. A sheriff's deputy is waiting for him to escort him off campus. He's told that he is suspended for 3 semesters from school, which sort of, he was weeks away from graduating. And so this would have thrown his whole education, if not his whole life, into turmoil, just because they didn't like his criticism of the school policy.
I don't know. I find that to be, well, I guess that's the point. You find that to be ridiculous.
Yeah,
and amazing.
Exactly.
That's why they get a Muzzle Award. All right, let's go to the Salem, Missouri, the Library Board of Trustees.
Well, this comes back to the filtering issue again. Here it was, they engaged a filtering service on the library computers that they were warned ahead of time that this had some problems, but it basically filtered out, the way the incident came about was a woman wanted to do some research on Wicca, on Wiccan, you know, this, let's see, shall we say, non-mainstream religious belief of a lot of folks, and the filter service would not allow her access to it. Then it was discovered it also denied access to a lot of these non-mainstream religions, including some Native American traditions. And the reason was that this filter classified these as being occult or criminal, and therefore, since it fell in those categories, it was not allowed, whereas access, again, to all sorts of other religious, mainstream religious sites were allowed. This case is in litigation as we speak, but again, it's another question of these web filters trying to going beyond prohibiting unprotected content to engaging in viewpoint discrimination on particular issues.
If my memory is correct, in the Salem, Missouri, the one we were just talking about case, the lawyer representing this group, they sort of gave up, but the lawyer said, we could have won that if we had the money to keep going. Is that correct?
Oh, the school district.
So do you find that these, when you give out an award, is there any, do the group say we're sorry in any case, or do they most likely fight back and say, you know, that's ridiculous, we would have won if we could have gone further, or the judge was incorrect by giving us that, or do they say, thank you for pointing that out to us?
There, we, before we award the Muzzles, we actually write to each of the nominees and tell them that they've been nominated for this, and we send them the articles that we might have or the information that we have that we're basing the nomination on, and say, look, we know we don't have the full story. We may be missing some facts. We want your input in this, but this is not a done deal. And many times they do write back, and they will provide us with information that's either mitigating or exculpatory. Or they will say, they will admit, yeah, we did this, but we made a mistake, and we've changed our policy to adjust to it. That takes them off the list. That does take them off the list if they show that they have corrected themselves. And that's what free speech is all about, really. It's about being convinced, you know, by more speech that your position is wrong. But more often than not, we'll get these letters back that say, we're firm believers in free speech. We don't believe in censorship. But, and then they just start digging the hole deeper.
But gay folks shouldn't have the right. But gay is wrong.
Exactly.
And that's
exactly
why we don't want people to read that.
Going back,
that was in one of the...
The school district one about the gay and lesbian websites, because one of the school board members afterwards said, well, of course we don't want them having access to these sites, because these sites, would be like us telling them that it's okay to be gay.
All right, 11:38 on the wake-up call. Our guest, Josh Wheeler from the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. We're talking about their Muzzle Awards for 2012. You're welcome to call in. Todd had a great question. 979-0919 1-877-WNRN Rocks.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, with all the talk about replacing Charlottesville's Belmont Bridge, the Hook takes a closer look at why it might need replacing. Their clue, if the Belmont Bridge were a child and the city of Charlottesville were its parent, social services would definitely be getting involved. And the neighborhood of Belmont also makes the news with the arrest of its stereotype-smashing drug ring. Local authorities take down young professionals and private school graduates selling crack. And there's a visit with Peter Hatch, the man who has run the gardens and grounds of Monticello for 35 years. That's the Hook. No appointment necessary. And today's programming also supported by Dixon Disposal. When Dixon picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. Dixon also offers single-stream recycling during regular pickup. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more information, it's DixonDisposal.com or 434-978-2111. All right, back with our guest, Josh Wheeler, talking about the 2012 Muzzle Awards. Josh, one of my favorite was Mayor Wayne Garner from Carrollton, Georgia.
Yeah, this is one that a lot of people enjoy. This mayor received a muzzle for deciding that he unilaterally could be the cultural arbiter of what is appropriate and to take place in a community-owned theater. A local theater troupe had applied for permission, received it to perform in this public venue. And they wanted to put on a production of the Rocky Horror Show, you know, which many people have seen in the motion picture as a Rocky Horror Picture Show. Well, one of the cast members posted on Facebook, again, Facebook, a clip of one of the early rehearsals of this. Somehow the mayor saw this and just decided, all right, nope, you cannot perform that play here. It's not appropriate to be performed in our city-owned theater. Now, a lot of people will say, well, yeah, you know, the city can decide what gets performed in their theater and what doesn't. That's true, but you have to set up a process. The First Amendment requires that you set up a process that doesn't give the city just unlimited authority to choose what the viewpoints it likes and what it doesn't like. In this case, the mayor, there was a committee that would approve what productions got performed in the theater. They had approved this, and the mayor just unilaterally on his own overrode that decision. And he then later claimed that he had their support in doing this. The committee took out an open letter the next day stating, no, we didn't agree to this at all. And part of the irony of this was that the mayor wasn't just talking about the children seeing this, because they can limit access by children to this thing. He was talking about adults being denied access to seeing this thing. And this is in the same place in which they have a casino night in which adults only are allowed. So it's not as if they don't have some things going on which they've already set the precedent
for. It was the material.
It was the material. And he just decided on his own that this material was inappropriate for to be shown in this community-owned theater, despite the viewpoint of the committee that had been set up to approve these things or not.
One of the things I found, and I think I found this on the center's webpage, there was a comment. I'm going to limit part, and I read part of the comment back. I'm surprised this was somebody complaining about the Muzzle Award, some of the choices that were given and some of those awards that were overlooked. I'm surprised there's no mention of the crackdowns on Occupy Wall Street or the arrests of journalists trying to cover some events. Feedback on that?
Yeah, it's very difficult on the Muzzle Awards, because for every one that we select, there probably could be six or seven that we would replace. We have about 300 nominees that we have to pare down to this dozen or so that we give it out to. Occupy Wall Street was seriously discussed. I mean, so many different variations or things that occurred. The problem is, and one of the things we do with the muzzles is that we have to make we always have to be certain that we have the facts straight. And on a ironically, on almost every one of these Occupy, and we had about six that we were looking into, some Occupy Wall Street variation. It was very difficult to confirm exactly what happened and the facts. We always found something to contradict one of the issues, one of the statements of fact that we found that we thought was deserving of a muzzle. We always found something else that seemed to contradict that, or at least mitigate that. And so, yes, that's a very, very good question. Our muzzles are not to say that that there weren't incidents that deserved a muzzle. It's just that we could not verify in individual instances exactly what happened.
All right, 11:45. As we're talking about the Muzzle Awards 2012, I have three left, which includes a Lifetime Achievement Award. Let's jump to one that involved a Palestinian cartoonist.
Yeah, this wins the award. Well, maybe with Sam Houston State. This wins the award, I think, for the most ironic muzzle this year. The State Department every year sponsors a international conference in which they invite leaders in particular professions from different countries to come to the United States and meet with their counterparts. The idea is to, through this interaction, gain better awareness of the United States. We gain better awareness of their cultures. Well, last year, the theme of it was freedom of speech. And they specifically were inviting political cartoonists from around the world to come and participate in this conference, talking about the how much of an impact political cartoons can have in societies in which you have free speech. Well, this one particular cartoonist from Palestine had been invited over a year to come to this thing. He applied for his visa. He got his permission. He was ready to go. 2 weeks before the conference, he was notified that his invitation has been rescinded and he would not be able to come. The reason being that somebody at the State Department did some research and found some cartoons on his website that they didn't like, that they thought could be offensive. They said that they thought they were anti-Semitic specifically. The cartoonist vehemently denies this. He says, my cartoons aren't anti-Semitic. They're anti-Israel. They're anti-Israel in terms of their policies regarding the occupation of Palestine. But they're political in nature. He said, I tolerate all religions. From our position, it doesn't matter. The fact is, you don't have a conference on free speech and then deny somebody the ability to attend because you don't like what they have to say. I mean, think of the message that it sends to the rest of the world about the United States. It sends a message that we only give lip service to the idea of free expression. We really don't tolerate it. It's free speech as long as we agree with it.
You mentioned at the start of the hour a big court victory. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. That was on one of the things that the center does. We direct a First Amendment clinic at the law school where students work on our cases and receive academic credit for it. We were involved in a case we sued to get access to the judicial records in the case where the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, sued AIG, the huge insurance conglomerate. You know, they took in like $15 billion last quarter. Anyway, just a quick background on this. The SEC had sued AIG. They entered into a settlement agreement by which AIG agreed to be monitored to make sure that they were complying with proper procedures, everything like this. A reporter wanted access to those monitoring reports. She thought, hey, this is the government monitoring, a government appointee monitoring this agency on behalf of the SEC, and wanted to see what the SEC was doing in response to these. I mean, this is an organization, AIG, by the way, that probably had a great deal to do with the financial meltdown of 2008. Well, they both the government and AIG opposed this. They said the public didn't have a right to know. Through our clinic, we intervened. We filed a motion saying, no, that there's a common law right of access to this information. And I have to give all the credit to the students who worked on this because they required very little supervision. They did the research, the drafting, All I did was edit and change a couple of periods here and there. And this week, the court agreed. The court said, no, these are judicial records that the public has a right to a common law right of access to. This was a tiny little Thomas Jefferson Center taking on the SEC and AIG. We were very proud of that.
11:49 on the wake-up call. Just that little bit of time left as we talk about the Muzzle Awards 2012 from Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Josh Wheeler, the director, here today on WNRN's wake-up call. Let me give a thanks to Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be here today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 434-296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. And the man just walked in the room. That's Drew Thompson, here for Les Temps Perdue at noon. The best of 80s and 90s alternative. Drew plays the roots of alternative because you can't understand where you are without first knowing where you've been. Enjoy the times gone by with Les Temps Perdue at noon only on WNRN. All right, I have two.
You want to quickly run
Muzzle
through
awards? No, we got 10 minutes. Oh, okay. We're good. That's about what we've been doing in the second half because one of my favorites, Norfolk, Virginia Police Department.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites too. A gentleman was at a rally by a Black Panther-related organization. They were doing a peaceful march, and he was filming them. He also, in the course of filming him, he panned over and started filming the police officer sitting in a car who was there to monitor the activity, you know, make sure everything went peaceful. Police officer got out of the car, came over to the man, and said, "You don't have the right to film me without my permission." Now, this is a public, a police officer on duty in public, in a place where he, this, and the man was in a place where he had every right to be. That, in fact, is incorrect. He does not have to have permission police to be able to film this kind of thing. In fact, this is the kind of thing that we want to encourage, where we want to encourage public monitoring of our government officials, including the police department. But this, apparently this guy who filmed it had a history of posting things on Facebook. And
the guy taking the photo,
yeah,
the guy doing the video.
And the police didn't like this. And you can actually, if you go to our website, again, tjcenter.org, we have the actual video that the man shot, and you'll see the police come up. And they were very respectful at first, I have to tell them that, but they were very calmly telling him over and over again that he didn't have the right. He responded, "Why? Why don't I have the right? Who says this?" Now, eventually, they got tired of him filming. They literally just slapped the camera out of his hand, knocked it onto the ground, and charged him with both filming without a permit, which doesn't exist, and disorderly conduct. The day of the court proceeding, the city attorney took a look at this and said, "Are you kidding me? No, you know, drop the charges. Let's get out of here as quickly as possible." So that's why Norfolk Police Department earned its Jefferson Muzzle this year.
But, all right, and I gathered from what you said in the beginning is because these are public government officials.
Right.
But at what point do I, as a private person, have the right to say, please don't film me and put that on Facebook? I don't want my mother to know that I was at this parade because I said that I was doing this today. I couldn't help with the yard work because I told her I'd be at church.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if you're in public and in a public space and you're recorded, there's not much you can do about that. By essentially the law reflects that if you go into this situation, you essentially are volunteering to be in this. And if you happen to get recorded, then, you know, people can show that. Now you have the right to, object if they're trying to do this for some commercial purpose. For example, they can't make money off of your likeness or name or something like that without getting your permission, or at least without you getting some piece of the pie. And there are some instances in which you can film somebody that your right of privacy might be violated. For example, if they were, you know, they snuck over a fence and were filming you in your backyard or someplace you shouldn't be. But that's different than being at a public event and a public forum. In that situation, your right of privacy is very limited.
A real quick question on this, because I want to make sure to get to the Lifetime Achievement Award. Next week here on Wake Up Call, we're going to be talking about privacy in the modern world. I have UVA professor Siva Vadia Nathoa from UVA's Media Studies. He does a class on privacy and surveillance. All the videos, you know, if you there are hundreds, maybe not here in Charlottesville, but if you go to Washington, D.C. or New York City, you can pretty much trace yourself down the street. How does that fall into the right of expression? Can I not say, please don't put your camera on me?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to and under the circumstances. It's a much more nuanced situation. I hate to be a lawyer on this, but it often depends upon the particular facts of the case and how they're being filmed.
I should have you and Professor together to discuss this.
He's very good. I was just at a conference that he participated in yesterday and met him for the first time. He's very, very good.
All right. It is 11:55 on the Wake Up Call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Finishing up our conversation today with Josh Wheeler, director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression, the 2012 Muzzle Awards, the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes. The Virginia Department of Corrections has earned a Lifetime Achievement Award. This is the third year in a row that we awarded a muzzle to the Virginia Department of Corrections. And given that they just seemed not to get the hint, we just decided to bestow this bigger honor on them. It's only the third time in the 21-year history of the muzzles that we've given a Lifetime Achievement Award. In this particular instance, it was due to the fact that a friend of a prisoner wanted to send to this inmate the collected works of Dylan Thomas, read by the author himself on CD. Well, the Department of Corrections has a policy, which is that prisoners cannot have spoken word non-religious CDs. They can have musical CDs, and they can have spoken word religious CDs, but they cannot have secular spoken word CDs. I'm still not exactly sure the reason for the policy. And part of this, you have to understand, is sort of this ongoing battle with the DSA. And let me say for the record, I have great sympathy with the people, Department of Corrections. This is a very tough job, maintaining safety, and discipline within the prison environment. But at the same time, you still have to have some common sense. And I agree that prisoners give up a good amount of their civil liberties and rights, you know, by committing a crime. Liberty is one of the things. But at the same time, denying people access to materials that, in fact, could possibly help them in their rehabilitation is just sort of silly in our mind. And the DOC keeps being sued on these things. In fact, a local attorney, Jeff Fogel, deserves a great deal of credit, and he keeps winning. And each time, the department just says, okay, when they come back and they don't really listen to the decision, what the court said, and they just sort of tweak their policy a little bit and impose another unconstitutional regulation on the prisoners. I don't know about you, Rick, but personally, I'm going to feel better about the prisoner who's released who wanted to read Dylan Thomas or hear Dylan Thomas or Shakespeare or any of than I am for the prisoner who didn't want any kind of didn't have any sort of literary interest or interest in the arts or culture or anything like that.
But, so this is they got the Lifetime Achievement Award because they won a muzzle in 2010 and 2011. As well as this award, which happened to raise from a traditional muzzle to...
And also the reason is because of a point you were talking about earlier, there seems to be no recognition, despite all of these court decisions, no recognition that the prisoners have First Amendment rights.
Is the same director making these choices, setting these policies? They say, oh, you got a muzzle award, please step down, we'll put someone else in your place?
That I don't know if it's been the same director for all 3 years, but I have to I have to say that I don't think that these policies are necessarily completely made by the director himself, and that's why we felt the department as a whole was deserving of a muzzle.
All right. Josh, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Fascinating conversation. I love this. And please come back in the future.
I hope so. Thank you, Rick.
All right. Josh Wheeler, he's the director of the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. We're talking about the 2012 Muzzle Awards. You can go online to read a little bit more about each one, see some videos, et cetera. TJCenter.org. And the show will be podcast, and we'll attach it to our Seville News. And I think Josh was mentioning getting it on the TJCenter.org site as well. Again, next week we'll be talking about privacy in the modern world with UVA professor Siva Vaidyanathoa. See you next week.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.